go ahead and start. So I'm going to just have you say your names one more time and where you're from, if you don't mind.
Shelly Rao, I'm from Fiji.
I'm Becky Malay from the Philippines.
Thanks for agreeing to talk with us. Could you tell us, I mean, you've both traveled a really long way to be here, and so obviously this issue is important to you. Why?
Oh gosh, we've been talking about this practically for a month now. I mean, both of us have been on tour around the US, different parts of the US, talking about this. But the basic message is that the policies or the programs of these institutions and related institutions like the Asian Development Bank are simply not working for the people and who they say it's supposed to be working for. It is working for the cronies, for politicians, for corporations, and for the institutions themselves. And also to highlight that they call on our governments to be, and us, the people, to be transparent and accountable and to practice good governance, but they don't practice what they preach. They're not accountable to anybody. They're not transparent for anybody. They have their own charter that that grants them immunity from this.
Well, for the many years that the World Bank and the IMF have been in the countries of the South, it has been more poverty, it has been more development that resulted as a, you know, from the policies that they tried to implement. The structural adjustment programs have not worked. They aren't working right now, but they keep telling us we have to follow their prescriptions. We have done those, but we're still poor. In fact, there are more poor people now. So we are calling for debt cancellation because all the programs that they have done in most countries of the South have caused us into deeper indebtedness. So we want the debts cancelled. We want them out of our countries.
Well, any further things you just want to add? That what you've been talking about this weekend and maybe specific impacts in your country?
Well, as Becky has said too, I mean, we've seen poverty rise, we've seen unemployment rise, we've seen the depletion of our resources. I mean, we always say, why are these institution and industrialized countries like G7 interested in developing countries? Because we have the resources. Human, natural, mineral, we have the resources.
That's important to get their voices. So
have that little red thing that's in your bag there.
One second, if you don't mind. We're still good in time.
Mine's buried, so
unfortunately, technology has to.
Okay.
Oh, that's just look at the
edge.
Yeah.
It's not going to entirely work, but
yes.
So if you don't mind, I'll stand like a little bit closer to you. So I'm sorry if you can just
Put it closer to your
phone. I know where it needs to be.
Sorry.
So want to start again with that thought?
About the resources.
The question we ask is, why are industrialized countries and institutions like the IMF, World Bank interested in our countries? And naturally, it has to do with the resources that are in developing countries or countries of the South or Third World. I mean, we're resource rich, human resources, natural resources, mineral resources, you name it, we have it. And it's been for years now, it's been our experience and our struggle that although our people may own the resources, they do not necessarily control the resources. The resources are controlled by those who have the means to effectively utilize these resources for their own benefits.
Is that okay with the wind?
Yeah, I mean, it's sweeping through, but hopefully we're getting enough of it. I also wanted to ask if either of you were at the protest yesterday, if you had, or even if you weren't, if you had any comments on the police crackdown. The estimation is that 600 some odd people out of maybe 1,700 who were present were arrested preemptively. Any comment on that? Were you surprised that occurred?
Do you want me to block it off?
I think if you're over here, you're blocking.
Well, I think it was an overreaction from the police. I don't understand why people should not be given the right to express themselves and to say what they want, and I don't understand why they should. There should be a preemptive strike. They're not at war, so I think it's microcosmic of Bush's policy on the countries like Iraq and Afghanistan. So it's weird.
Yes, we weren't part of the protest because we had workshops and we're talking about our experiences and our struggles. But, you know, when you talk about the violence, what's one broken window? When you think of the violence that have been, that our people, you know, go through. Hundreds, thousands of people die from HIV/AIDS every day. Hundreds and thousands of children die from starvation, malnutrition every day. Hundreds of people die from some health-related disease every day. What's that, you know, in comparison to one broken Citibank or shitty bank, as we call it, window?
Are you going to be protesting today?
Of course. Yes, we are.
Thank you.
Thanks. Justice, tell me, are you out there? Where 1,000 people have gathered to say that we want to cancel the debt now. And they're saying also that we need to stop the spread of global AIDS, and that the way that we can do that is by canceling debt and freeing up these resources within countries so that we can fight AIDS that's coming. And they're going to be joining us in a few minutes. They're marching down 15th. So when they come, I want to hear a really warm welcome for them, that we can welcome them into this huge crowd. So basically what we were doing just a few minutes ago, we had some speakers that were talking about what really the impact of AIDS is around the world. Not only in this country, but in countries like Africa, where 7,000 people die every day from the AIDS virus. Do you know what that means? Do you know what it means to have 7,000 people die every day? Can you imagine every day over the life of a year what that would amount to? What that means is that there are villages in Africa where all you can see are children and grandparents, and the rest of the generation is absurdly missing. And this is when African countries are paying $14.5 billion worth of debt service every year to the IMF and to the World Bank. How ridiculous is that? It's ridiculous! And all it takes to really turn around the AIDS crisis is $10 billion from wealthy nations. So do the math. It's ridiculous. So these folks are going to come and join us in a few minutes. They're coming down because they've been saying to Treasury, you're responsible. The United States owns the World Bank. We know that's true. And so it's the United States' responsibility to make this happen. That means it's our responsibility because we own the United States. No? Are you going to let corporations own the United States?
No!
No more corporate greed!
No!
Cancel the debt!
Cancel the debt!
You know, when I look out here, I see hope. I see hope in every face that I see out here on this lawn, because you are the face of democracy. You are the face of the people who will turn this around, who will build us a better world. And you're starting right now because you are exercising your most fundamental right. Your right to speak out on this issue. So I want to thank you, because this is what democracy looks like. Come on, chant it with me. This is what democracy looks like. I can't hear you. This is what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy feels like.
This is what democracy looks like.
You know, the reason why I got involved in this is because I used to work with some of the most impoverished municipalities in Nicaragua, which is one of the most impoverished nations in this hemisphere. And when I was working there, there was Hurricane Mitch, and in a town called Cosoltega, a volcano fell apart. It crumbled under the weight of the hurricane, and it came roaring down the mountain, and it started to eat up everything in its path. It ate up women and children and men, and it tore clothing off of people's bodies, and it consumed all of the houses. And when people tried to escape from this rushing mud and rock and volcano eruption, and tried to run the way, they'd get sucked right on in. And people who seen their whole families lost to this hurricane tried to jump into that mud and that rock out of grief, and they were tossed out. But what happened? Why did this happen? It was not only a natural disaster. The reality is that Hurricane Mitch was set up by long-time poor environmental management. It was set up because the IMF and the World Bank had been taking away environmental protections in Nicaragua, and so there was a rapid deforestation that just drew in the hurricane. It drew it in, and it caused a great devastation. But what's even more outrageous than that, what's even more absurd, is the fact that the president of Nicaragua was afraid to declare a state of emergency. And he was afraid because he was told he would lose foreign investment if he declared a state of emergency. And who told them that? Who do you think said, you're going to lose your foreign investment if you declare a state of emergency after Hurricane Mitch? IMF? World Bank? U.S.? So what happened? There's this huge hurricane. Thousands of lives are lost. People are dying. They are suffering. And there is no more health care opportunities in Nicaragua. They'd all been eroded. They'd all been washed away from policies of the IMF and the World Bank. So more people died needlessly after this hurricane. So what does that tell you? That tells you that we've had enough. That there should not be situations like this any longer, that we need to do the things that will make a difference. We need to cancel the debt. We need to shut these institutions down. So tell me about it. Are we going to cancel the debt? We're going to cancel the debt now. We're going to shut them down. And what I see over there is I see posters coming and they're saying that we got to cancel the debt to fight AIDS, and that's because that rally I talked about when I first started talking is here now. Right. So let's give them a warm welcome. Right. Let's welcome ACT UP Philadelphia. Right. Let's welcome Jubilee USA Network. Woo. Let's welcome Help Now. Right. Let's welcome the student organization. Let's welcome them because they bring us truth, and I want to thank you for listening to me today, and I want to ask you to tell me, what does democracy look like? This is what democracy looks like.
It's March before we hear our next speaker, so let's welcome them with chants and clapping and screaming.
Yeah.
treatment against HIV and AIDS. We welcome you and we thank you for joining the march. Our next speaker is Meg Guerrero with the Southwest Organizing Project and the Southwest Network for Economic and Environmental Justice in New Mexico. Please welcome Mike Guerrero.
Sisters, greetings from the great state of New Mexico, from the great desert southwest, southwestern United States, from northern Mexico, from my organizations, the Southwest Organizing Project and the Southwest Network for Environmental and Economic Justice. I come to you today from the U.S.-Mexico border region. The South within the North. The front line of where people are being forced from their lands throughout Latin America and forced to the border region. The front line where people are dying every day from pollution caused by corporate criminals. The front line where people are dying every day from poverty caused by unemployment by corporate criminals. The front line where every day people are dying from the hands of our U.S. military, from our U.S. Border Patrol, from vigilante racists that live on the U.S. side of the border. I come to you today to make a call for justice, a call for environmental, economic, and social justice along the U.S.-Mexico border region. I'm here to invite you today to an action that will be taking place on October 12th, a mobilization, several mobilizations that we'll be having at the U.S.-Mexico border. Four border cities, four border crossings, and several actions, support actions throughout the United States and Mexico. We're going to march organizations on each side of the border, and we're going to meet on the middle of the bridges. We're going to redefine and take back that territory and eliminate that border and open that border that belongs to everybody that lives in that region. Not to the corporations, not to the military, not to the Border Patrol, not to these corporate criminals, not to these institutions like the World Bank and the IMF. It belongs to us! I have to tell you a little story. October 12th was chosen as the day for these mobilizations, and we're going to do this not just this year, but next year and the year after. October 12th is known to many people as Columbus Day. To us, it's not known as Columbus Day. We call it the Dia de la Raza, the day that the mestizo was born throughout the continents of the Americas. I want to tell you a little story about Christopher Columbus. When Columbus came, and the Arawak Indians were subjected to the rule of the Spaniards, there was a tithe, a tax that was put on the Arawak Indians that said that every month you have to bring a quota of gold to the Spanish colonizers. If you did not come up with your quota of gold in the first month, they would cut off your foot. If you did not come up with your quota of gold, the next month they would cut off your other foot. The next month your hand, the next month your other hand, etc. and so on until you were dead. Brothers and sisters, this is what these corporations, the World Bank and the IMF, are doing to our communities and nations throughout the world today. Little by little, they're cutting us our feet, they're cutting off our hands, they're cutting off our heads, they're dismembering our nations and our communities, and they're killing our people. Are we going to continue to allow these corporate raiders to kill our people? No, we won't. Are we going to continue to allow the World Bank and IMF to determine the destiny of our communities? No, we won't. Are we going to continue to allow these corporations to wander around the globe freely, killing, murdering, and plundering while our people suffer? No, we won't. I'm asking you, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, to join us again October 12th this year, October 12th next year, October 12th the year after that, 2004, when the warmonger George Bush and his cronies are going to be up for re-election. We need to send a message, and we need to reclaim these borders. We need to shut them down, and we need to open them up for people. We need to open them for people, not for profits, not for capital, not for the greedy capitalists. I want to thank you all very much for coming out today. It's a beautiful day. It rains. It rained. Many of us stood in the rain at other protests and actions. People got arrested in the rain. We spoke and we struggled and we discussed for the last few days in the rain. This is our reward, and this will be our reward as we continue to struggle, and we'll stand in the rain many more days until we have days like this again when the sun is shining down on justice for all of us.
It is a warm day. Many of you just marched in. If you need water, we have a water table over stage left. Go pick it up. More than 35 years ago, our next speaker wrote a book called Unsafe at Any Speed. Maybe as we welcome here, we can encourage him to write a new book, Unsafe in Word and Deed, The Designed In Dangers of the IMF and the World Bank. The 2000 Green Party candidate for President of the United States, the world's most foremost consumer advocate, a leader in the struggle for global justice, Ralph Nader.
Thank you all for coming. Look at that one over there. That's Gene Stokes' work. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. I want to say a few words today, but before I get into my discourse, I want to thank C-SPAN for bringing this to millions of people all over the United States. It's C-SPAN who gives voice to rallies like this, and the reason why so many people have to use the streets in order to express their views about the devastating effects of multinational corporations, their dictatorial allies, their oligarchic partners, and their instruments of repression and misdirection, such as the IMF and the World Bank. The reason why people have to go to the streets, public places, is because they've been excluded from the other public property they own, year after year, the public airwaves. The people of our country own the public airwaves. The radio and TV stations control the public airwaves. 90% of all time is entertainment and advertising. The radio and TV stations pay no rent to the people of the United States for their licenses that they get from the Federal Communications Commission. When the people of the United States have their own radio and TV stations and their own audience networks, they won't have to go to the streets. Yeah. We're gathered here today, united by one theme, that democracy is an instrument of justice, and everybody in the world should be able to use it. everybody in the world to advance the health and the safety and the economic standard of living and the respect for the environment and the nurturing of childhood and the respect for future generations and the ability of democracy, government of, by, and for the people, to wage peace. Our government is spending $380 billion this year preparing for war. They're not spending $10 million to wage peace. Half of the entire discretionary spending of our federal government is now in the military budget. Half. Aside from Social Security and Medicare, which are social insurance systems, imagine all the necessities throughout our 50 states where poverty is increasing, where unemployment is increasing, where affordable housing is more and more difficult to get, where children in the millions are living in dire poverty, where two breadwinners per family can't make ends meet and they're going into debt, $7 trillion of consumer debt, where environments are being devastated, the contamination of the air, water, soil, where corporations are running amok, wasting precious energy in the fossil fuel area and then obstructing solar energy from replacing fossil fuels. Corporations know no limits to their power other than the rule of law, the mobilization of informed citizens, the countervailing force of trade unions and environmental groups and anti-poverty groups and civil rights groups, the countervailing force of an aroused, informed citizenry who basically challenges the corporate domination of the world that's called euphemistically globalization. That challenges the privatization of essential public services and health and education and water. That's euphemistically called privatization. It's corporatization. The struggle between civic values and corporate commercial values is the main collision in this world today. If you make a list of the 10 most serious problems and injustices affecting the world, you will see that the giant multinational corporations are either increasing the seriousness of these problems and injustices, or indifferent to them, and very, very rarely ameliorating them. Dictatorships are institutions to cut deals with, to cut mining and other concessions by multinational corporations. They can live with dictatorships, but the people under their yoke cannot. The environment, relentlessly attacked by the fossil fuel industries, by the pesticide industries, by biotech industries, by industries that destroy the basic resource that sustains all life on Earth, from the land erosion to the water depletion to the destruction of the equatorial forests to the expansion of acid rain, to the depletion of the oxygen in the oceans, to the poisoning of the air and water, to the buildup of global warming. Those come from corporate technologies, directly utilized, directly imposed, directly transferred to other autocratic institutions. What this is all about, what today is all about, what the struggle for democracy is all about, is who decides, who pays, who writes the rules, who builds the future, who plans for humanity. Large corporations, giant corporations like ExxonMobil and DuPont and Imperial Chemical and Shell and Merck Sharp and Dohme and General Motors, they no longer have any allegiance to country or community other than control them around the world. they're so willing to drop their U.S. citizenship and go to some tax haven in the Bermudas or Bahamas and still demand that the taxpayers subsidize them, the taxpayers bail them out, the taxpayers give them free research and development, such as drugs that are then used for massive profit against people who are sick and can't afford $14,000 for six treatments for Taxol, for AIDS, for AIDS. We're entitled to ask why we the people have allowed artificial legal entities that are chartered by the state governments to have all the rights that human beings have, and privileges and immunities and power that human beings will never have. How can we have equal justice under the law in the United States of America? Equal justice between you and General Motors, between you and Exxon? Impossible. We have to subordinate the power of corporations to the sovereign power of the people institutionally. Business Week magazine put it very concisely 2 years ago with a cover asking too much corporate power and saying in seven detailed pages inside the magazine, yes, yes, yes. This is a mainstream business magazine loaded with corporate ads, but had the courage in their editorial that year to cite a poll of the American people where 72% of the American people said that corporations have too much control over their lives. And Business Week concluded with the most succinct forward path for democracy in this country. And I quote Business Week, quote, corporations should get out of politics, end quote. People back home listening to the speakers of this rally are entitled to know that while they're being told there are no tax dollars for their public transit, for their health clinics, for their schools to be rebuilt, while there are no public funds for their parks, no public funds for a whole host of other necessities, there are billions of their tax dollars for the IMF and the World Bank that go through Congress without any scrutiny. People back home are entitled to understand that though they work hard every day, 47 million workers in this country don't make a living wage. 17 million make under $7 an hour. But the CEOs are making 530 times more than the workers in their country in a fit of greed and self-enrichment that the world has never seen. Hundreds of millions of dollars going to one crooked CEO, corporate boss. And what are the American people demanding? And it doesn't matter if they're listening to Rush Limbaugh or Amy Goodman. They're all demanding the same thing. Catch those crooked corporate bosses, make them pay it back, convict them, and send them to jail. Important to remember that we all have a big job to do. When we go back home, we got to expand our epicenter of influence with our friends and neighbors and workers. Ask them to give themselves a chance to read about what's going on in the world, what's going to happen to their children and grandchildren if we don't roll back the forces of corporatism, oligarchy, plutocracy, dictatorship, and reaction. Once and for all, we have to do that because the world is a world of increasing risk, increasing technological risk, and military risk, and poverty risk, and disease risk. And the American people are at the top of the ladder in terms of education and the ability to make a difference. And we've got to put that moral imperative on our back so we can help liberate billions of people in the third world and Eastern Europe and allow their genius to flower. You've heard how few billions of dollars are needed to save millions of children's lives, how few billions of dollars are needed to save millions of people who are dying from AIDS and tuberculosis and malaria and other hemorrhagic diseases. And it's not happening. We're spending, as a world, $4 billion a day on military arms. $4 billion a day. And we're spending less than $200,000 a day researching tuberculosis and malaria. That's the kind of maniacal, cruel, oppressive priorities that flow from regimes that are under the control of commercial interests who corrupt them as well as themselves. We have to recognize that the genius of the third world is going to save the third world. It's not going to be the World Bank, and it's not going to be IMF. The greatest idea of education in terms of literacy came from people like Paulo Freire of Brazil, not the World Bank or the IMF. The greatest ideas of giving shelter to people has come not from the World Bank or the IMF, but from the people's architect in Egypt, Hassan Fathi, who taught illiterate Egyptian peasants how to build little houses from the soil under their feet. And architects around the world are extending his work. It will come from ideas like the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh that provided microcredit led by Muhammad Yunus for thousands of women and other entrepreneurs, 100, 200 dollar loans to build village-based enterprises. These and other ideas deserve to be widely publicized by all of us, because the multinational corporate model in these countries, backed by dictatorial and oligarchic regimes, will not work. What will work is agricultural credit cooperatives, independent trade unions, democratic elections, health sanitation corps, educational initiatives, and the production of food to become self-reliant, community-based, grassroots economies with appropriate technology. Let me conclude with two references and one exhortation. In the coming months, Congress is going to be asked to extend NAFTA all the way to the southern tip of South America. In the coming months, Congress is going to be asked to expand the burden on U.S. taxpayers to inflate the coffers of the IMF. And in the coming months, Congress will be asked to further the power of multinational corporations by voting down a whole wave of corporate crime reform packages that are being supported by a coalition all over the country. The website is citizenworks.org for those of you who want to get involved. Those of you... A new WTO version is on the horizon to apply the same pull-down strategies that infect the WTO gap on services in our country and around the world, healthcare services, education services, to be corporatized. Now, Congress has 535 men and women There are about 5,000 corporations that form the bulk of corporate power. We are 200 million American adults. Who's going to win? The key up-to-date website on corporate globalization is citizen.org. Citizen.org, look under Global Trade Watch. Check every morning the website, commondreams.org. Very efficient way to catch up on the real news in the country and the world. And October 4th, for those of you from New York City, New Jersey area, there will be. We're going to take the corporate crackdown on crime. We're going to take the crackdown on corporate crime to Wall Street for a big rally at noon on October 4th. We hope some of you will be there, right opposite the New York Stock Exchange, on the federal building, right opposite the New York Stock Exchange. So go back and focus on those 535 people. Make them put their voting record on their website. Make them come back when they come back home to meet with you. Educate them, enlighten them, put a fire under them. Tell them they're there to represent people, not corporations. And make sure that they feel that there's a growing, burgeoning movement, that you may be 50 in a congressional district one day, and you're 100 a week later, and you're 300 later, and you are going to expand and expand until they respond to your demands for justice. Thank you.
Thank you, Ralph. I think we are very clear on what our charge is. I would like to ask the people who are sitting on the stage to please get off for our next act. They need to have access, and people need to see what's going on. So if you're on the stage, please get off, take all your materials, and help us make it happen. Stage left is a water tent. If you're dehydrated.
All right, windiness. So if I'm like moving around and like getting in weird positions, yeah, it's the wind I'm trying to block. So
and which way should I
look, do you think? Let's see. It feels like it's coming between here.
Can you put it in mono?
If you go between us, like behind. Yeah, it's in mono. Thanks for reminding me. Okay, so levels. Okay. So if you could say your name and what group you're working with.
My name is Adam Taylor. I'm the director of an organization called Global Justice, and we have launched our first campaign called the Student Global AIDS Campaign.
And why are you here?
I'm here because fundamentally, globalization as it exists right now, which is mostly corporate-driven, is not working for the poorest people. And we can see that through devastating poverty that's increasing, inequality that's increasing, and particularly through a disease that has become the greatest human health crisis in history, which is HIV and AIDS. It's a virus that feeds off of poverty, it feeds off of people's vulnerability, and the debt that the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund continue to sit on, and the debt payments that they extract from poor countries, is exacerbating the spread of AIDS, because many countries are so poor they can't afford the basic medicines that would save their people's lives. They can't afford basic prevention programs that would get information to those who need the information the most. They can't afford basic care and treatment programs or programs that will care for the 12 million orphans that currently exist in sub-Saharan Africa.
Is there something you think people could be doing about this?
I think the efforts to get on the streets and to make our voice heard is really critical, but I also think efforts need to happen all around the country. We need to bring this issue to the local level. Most Americans don't understand what the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund do. They don't understand that we have a disproportionate role in shaping the policies of these institutions. They don't understand that we are actually complicit in the suffering and oppression of other people and in the spread of HIV and AIDS. And I think if we can appeal to their conscience and get that information to them, that they would oppose the policies that the World Bank and IMF promote.
Can you just make that connection a little bit clearer, how the World Bank policies divert funds, I guess, basically.
So the debt that they're holding, let's just take sub-Saharan Africa, which is the continent most extremely devastated by HIV and AIDS. They are paying out $14 billion each year in debt service payments. This is debt that was mostly amassed in the 70s and 80s when these institutions lent money with almost no expectation of getting paid back because it was all part of Cold War politics. Now it's the poor people in those countries that have to pay back the money that's amassed interest over time. And so it's costing lives in these countries because they can't afford basic medicines. But there are also conditions that were put on these loans called structural adjustment policies.
Thanks, Cosmo. A second. How's the wind doing?
It's okay.
That force countries to cut their healthcare budgets, that force countries to put user fees on education and healthcare. All of these are detrimental to health, to the ability to provide health. And so they're policies that countries have no choice but to abide to if they want to get any type of debt cancellation as the system is currently structured.
Thank you. Very good. And that was okay, the sound?
Right, but Ghana, he's here from South Africa because he was on trial for privatization of water.
Would you be able to make some talk as well?
Great.
We're doing with Indie Media. We also work for a community radio station. So it's
great. So if you can introduce yourself and say why you're here and talk about water privatization.
Okay. My name's Ranjan. I'm here in Washington.
Sorry, could you introduce yourself one more time? The levels were a little high.
Yeah. My name's Ranjan. I'm here in Washington because of the IMF meeting, but the main reason is because there's this big demonstration taking place. The main reason why I'm here is because I'm against the privatization of water. But there's so many other reasons why I'm here that I'm agreed. I'm against the war and everything else as well. The privatization of water is a big problem at the moment. It's happening in South Africa, in Latin America, everywhere in the world. Water's being privatized and people are being disconnected from their water. So, no, I mean, you can't even pretend. It's a question of trying to give people access to water because the opposite is taking place. People are being disconnected. In South Africa, apparently 10 million people are without electricity and water. That's the reason why I'm here. Oscar Oliveira spoke from Bolivia, talking about what's been going on, their experience with Bechtel. Bagani's here from Soweto, talking about his experiences as well.
Great. Can you introduce yourself and tell us about some of your experiences with water privatization and organizing around that in South Africa?
My name is Bongani Lubisi. I'm the member of Soweto Electricity Crisis Committee, Anti-Privatization Forum. Basically, we are working with all the issues that affect the community, basically, because all the issues have been privatized, like the issue of water. Now in South Africa, they've put a prepaid meter for the water, whereby if you don't have a man to buy a card, you don't have an access to water, or they put a tank in your tap so that you're not able to get the water. So we as the Soweto Crisis Committee, we remove those things, also we remove those prepaid so that we can reconnect for people so that they can have an access to water because we believe that water is a source of life. You can't live without water. What is contradicting that the government says we want to provide about 2.5 million people of water. About water, but this side is cutting more than that, the number that is promising to provide. So that's why we are fighting for water, and we don't want our water to be privatized. So we left the march on the 2nd of October, where I will be visiting the mayor and telling that we don't want our water to be privatized. We want our water to belong to the public because people have got the right to have water.
Yeah. Good. And were you imprisoned because of your activism around this?
Beg your pardon?
Was it true you were jailed for doing some actions around this?
Yeah, basically, we were arrested when we visited the mayor's house. So that our actual point was to go and submit the memorandum, also to cut his water and electricity, that he can fill his medication, you see. So when we reached there, they treated us bad, so we have to react. So when we react, you know, we don't owe the law. The law owns by the bourgeoisie. We are arrested. So we spent about 11 days in prison. Also, we are still attending the trial. Yeah, so we'll go back on the trial on the 23rd of October.
Very good.
His people are leaving, so he needs to...
Okay, very good.
Where they are.
Thank you very much.
Back of the stage.
We forced the IMF, the World Bank, the United States, and their three corporate friends to take these simple steps. These are our demands.
We demand that the U.S. commit $2.5 billion now. Increase this amount over time to fighting the global AIDS. We demand that $2 billion of this must go to the Global Fund, where countries can use the money to treat HIV and AIDS, those affected at this minute. We demand the U.S. and the multinational corporations like Coke prioritize access to lowest cost medicines regardless of patent status. AIDS prevention doesn't mean a thing to the 40 million people who are already HIV positive. We will not allow our government to ignore the fate of these people because they are poor or because they are black. Today, we hold them accountable. That's what you're doing here. That is the purpose of your coming.
Yep. Hi, this is Amy Brown.
And Meredith DeFrancesco.
And we are... Okay, start over again. Track. Hi, this is Amy Brown.
And Meredith DeFrancesco.
And we're reporting from the Washington Monument in Washington, D.C., of course, on September 28, 2002, at the Mobilization for Global Justice's protests against the IMF, International Monetary Fund, and World Bank. There are thousands of people here, more and more streaming in all the time and getting ready to make a big march to another park for another rally and also some civil disobedience later this afternoon. Say anything about this weekend?
Then that is an act of a hero. And you are heroes today.
That's great. Okay, if you want to, here, I'm just going to put the levels down a second. Identify yourself and talk about why you're here.
My name is Shalmali Gutta, and I work with an NGO with focus. It's called Focus on the Global South. It's based in Thailand. And we've been tracking World Bank IMF policies for years and years, you know. And we've been seeing what they've been doing to countries in Asia, particularly. That's where we're based. That's what we see with our own eyes. We've worked with friends and colleagues in Africa, in Latin America, in the Caribbean. We've seen the kinds of devastation that IMF World Bank programs and policies have wreaked. They've destroyed, they've pretty much destroyed our societies and economies in many ways. And so I'm here to be with this great group of people, you know, who are going to march and who are committed to creating public awareness, not only in other countries, but in their own country, because the U.S. tax money is a big, big subscriber of, you know, it's a big, powerful force in the World Bank and IMF. So I'm here to be in solidarity with them and march with them.
Once the public is aware, what do you hope they'll do?
We hope that the public will agree all over the world to stop letting our money provide institutional welfare for a bunch of guys who have been consistently providing bad policy advice and designing destructive programs. Our governments are not going to do it. We have to do it. You know, our governments are not standing up for us anymore, whether it's the U.S. government in your case or the Indian government in mine. Our governments have completely sold out, you know. And I think it's up to us now. It's our money they're using, our money. You know, the World Bank and IMF have AAA credit rating because our governments propped them up.
So it's up to the people now.
It's up to us, yeah. We've got to throw these guys out in their ear. Let them earn a decent living, you know. They put enough of us out of work, so...
Can you be a little bit more specific about how the World Bank's policies impact countries that you're talking about?
Well, the World Bank and the IMF have a standard package. You know, it's kind of like a set menu. So the set menu is that a country that's borrowing from them needs to privatize everything. Privatize all the way from water to banks, education, no matter what. The idea is privatize, 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 because their argument is that the government's don't anymore have the legitimacy or the competence to provide services and goods. So that's one, privatize. The second thing they move into is they say liberalize, which is open up your borders. Open up your borders to so-called free trade, to so-called free investment. Open up your banks. Open up your capital markets. Let investors, bankers, speculators, whoever it is, come. The idea is a borderless world, free market, and so on. But the truth of the matter is that markets are not free. Markets are completely manipulated. So the free market that our government are supposed to play in is not a market they have any control over. It's a market that is manipulated by the wealthy countries of this world, the G7 countries and primarily the United States. Free trade is not free. Who has majority of the trading power? North America, that's Canada, United States, the European countries, Japan. The third world, the developing countries, what are we? We're fodder. We're the raw material producers. So free trade isn't free. Investment, what happens with investment? Do we think the developing countries don't have any money to invest anywhere else? What we're doing is opening up our environments, our human beings, our markets for multinationals from other countries to come and invest. Okay? All of this is done without any democratic oversight. There's no public oversight. There's no democratic oversight. Most of the time, our parliaments don't know what's going on. I would bet your Congress doesn't know what's going on. You know? Your Congress would be horrified if they heard what was going on. The third step, and they all come together, is deregulation. So the government must, in our countries, they must pull out of their role of setting, providing minimum prices, fair prices, you know, minimum prices for farmers' goods, minimum wage, protecting workers, protecting housewives, welfare, and so on, you know. So idea is take government out of government, take government out of the economy. That's deregulation. They want us to rationalize property rights. No communal property anymore. No collective property. Individual rights. And so these are the policies that are being systematically implemented in every country. They've done this for 25 years. We have huge debt burdens, which we can't pay back because we have no economic potential left anymore. How do you pay back when you don't own any of the money you earn, right? So what's this led to? It's led to the destruction of our agriculture sectors, huge rural to urban migration. Our workers are getting retrenched. Poverty has doubled. You know, from 30 million in Asia, it's gone to almost 50 million. No, more than 50 million.
In the last three, four years
in Southeast Asia because of the economic crisis, it went from, you know, 20 to 30 million, it's gone to over 50 million of poor people that is living under $1 or $2 a day, right? We have a return of diseases that were ostensibly eradicated, like tuberculosis, AIDS is rampant. In our countries, we don't have access to pharmaceuticals and medicines that are needed. Water is privatized. The cost of education is going up. I mean, what shall I tell you? You know, it sounds like I'm throwing the book at them, but it's evil. It's criminal. It's happening. And it's happening in your country, too. It'll happen worse and worse, you know, because the corporations are not going to stop with ours.
We hear sometimes the justification for free trade policies is that because the economy is so bad in other countries, that the jobs, the way we're seeing globalization play out, like in our communities, is we've lost a lot of manufacturing jobs. There have been a lot of layoffs recently right in the community that we live in. And people say, well, you know, the jobs go overseas and the global trade helps other countries because we bring the jobs to the other countries. That's an argument that is sometimes used. Would you like to comment on that?
Yeah. I don't believe them. It's a lie. If a company relocates from the United States, if a factory relocates production from the United States to China or India or Bangladesh, it's not because they want to create the jobs. They're trying to keep their production costs down. The lower their production costs, the more profit they make.
Is it helping anybody in the other countries? Is it helping anybody in China?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, at a very immediate level and in a very short time span, yes, some workers will get employment in a free trade zone or an export processing zone. But what are the long-term impacts of that? Free trade zone and these export processing zones are places where there are no regulation. There's no minimum wage requirements. Workers are not allowed to organize, no rights of association, no environmental regulations. I mean, there's a cost. There's a much longer-term human and social cost. And we don't want our governments to convert places in our countries for free trade zone. We want workers everywhere, whether it's the United States or India or China, to have a living wage. It's not too much to ask. They're producing the wealth of the world, right? It's fair for them to have a living wage. We don't want people in developing countries to have, you know, excuse my language, but shit poor jobs to keep production costs down and have people in the United States out of work. That doesn't work either. And this is pitting labor against labor. You know, it's pitting labor against labor when the people who really need to be targeted are these big corporations and our governments who are backing them.
Absolutely. But we have to start thinking about the time. How do you spell your name, and is there a contact? I guess I could write it down, or you could say it on... Oh, great. Perfect.
Whoops.
Yeah, just what you think of today and why you're here.
I'm here because the government is really controlling the money strings of the little countries. They've got so much debt on them that they can't treat the AIDS people because they said they don't have the money because they're trying to pay us. And that's just, like, wrong, okay? Everyone is entitled to health care, and they should also have it. And as far as what I think, this is totally, totally awesome. It's a lot of people that are concerned about this, and a lot more need to be.
And what would you like to identify yourself?
Oh, hi. My name's Carolyn Smaller. I'm with ACT UP Philly.
Okay. A short one?
Yes. Okay. I know we're talking about going down to the shade, but we'll...
Yeah.
All right, but if you want to identify yourself and why you're here, all the things that you've just been talking about.
My name is John Bell. I'm a decorated Vietnam veteran. I'm 55 years old. I'm an AIDS activist. I'm HIV positive, diagnosed with AIDS ever since 1989. I'm an addict and alcoholic. I got 7 years clean. And I'm here joining this wonderful group of people who want others in this world that we live in to have the right to medicine, the right to water, the right to education, the right to health care. And that's why we're here. And we want the entities, first we want to name them in the form of the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and the World Trade Organization, and the entities, corporate greed, drug companies, U.S. policy, anything that stands in the way of people having access to the right of life. That's why we're here. We also know that the average citizen in the United States, because they listen to and look at the regular media, that they don't have the opportunity to know what these people here know. So I'm going to ask everyone in the sound of my voice, if you hear someone talking about the IMF and the World Bank, ask them, what do they mean? And where do they get that from? So in your research, and you're looking and trying to discover what it is, then you'll see what these people here see. They're problematic to other people who are living on the face of the earth. And just because we don't see them, that does not mean that we don't have to give them credit for life. So that's why I'm here. I've had a grand time. I had a grand time in the year 2000. One of the things that I was telling someone else that I actually met some of these people from other countries, and I haven't been able to process what they told me. It's staggering. And I know the hearts of American citizens, if they knew what's going on, they would actually want our government to do something about it. So the first thing that we need to do is to allow people to understand that this is happening. It is happening, and people are dying. And every day, every hour, so many people dying. And our country, our wonderful country, is at fault. So we have to make sure that our lawmakers change those policies that would allow other people to live. That's what we need to do.
Thank you so much.
Sure, sure.
Why you're here today? Why you're here or what this particular art piece is about right now.
What the art piece is about? This art piece is I'm holding a big arm of a doctor, and the doctor's inoculating the world against the corporate greed epitomized by the IMF and the World Bank.
Thank you.
Okay.
Say yes, because I took one of you.
Sorry.
The Bush regime has got to go, hey, hey! Ho, ho! The Bush regime has got to go, hey, hey! Ho, ho! The Bush regime has got to go, hey! Peace, not war! Drop the net and free the poor! Peace, not war! Drop the net!
Bring in a big
sign.
Okay.